Henry Kissinger once said, "Power is the ultimate aphrodisiac." And boy, was he right. Fame, fortune, and power can make people that much more attractive to some. You'll end up finding some odd pairings if you look close, and usually with a good size age gap, too. With power comes responsibility, and too often is it abused. As I have studied the presidents, it's few and far between when you aren't dealing with philandering. It seems as common as finding out about what college they attended. It wasn't until lately, though, in the Clinton administration, when covering the president's extramarital affairs became the norm. It used to be that the press would turn a blind eye to keeping good graces with the president. Now, all is fair game. But that most certainly doesn't stop people. I would nearly guarantee that in my lifetime, it will come out about a past or future president's infidelity. How we will handle it, I'm not so sure. If I tried to cover every president in this episode, I think we would be here until next week. So we're breaking it into parts. In part one, I'm going to cover these four presidents: Thomas Jefferson, Warren G. Harding, John F. Kennedy, and Bill Clinton. Between the four of these men, there is plenty to unpack. So let's get started. I'm your host, Rachel Payton, and you're listening to The Chronicles of Time. Let's dive into presidential affairs. I found it only fitting to start my list with a founding father. Although he wasn't married at the time, I believe raping your slave qualifies you to make such a scandalous list. It was around 1789 when Thomas Jefferson began sleeping with his slave, Sally Hemings, who was 16 at the time. Sally was the half-sister of Jefferson's deceased wife, Martha. Martha's father also slept with his slave, thus having Sally. This horrendous act seemed to be common among slave owners. Once, Sally accompanied Jefferson and his daughters to Paris, where she was technically a free woman there. She shockingly, especially to us now, returned back to Monticello, Jefferson's plantation, but not without demanding extraordinary privileges for her future children, freedom by the age of 21, amongst other things. Jefferson agreed. It's hard to even grasp how courageous Sally Hemings was to go up to the man who had complete control over her and demand that he give in to her request. How we would love to have her thoughts from the time, or even just a photograph of what she looked like. But we will never get those things, because as an enslaved woman, there are no pictures or documents from her lifetime. It is said that she favored her half-sister, Martha, Jefferson's departed wife. Perhaps that is what drew Jefferson specifically to Sally. On her deathbed, Martha made Thomas promise to never remarry, a promise he would keep until he died. As for having more children, well, she never said anything about kids, although one would generally apply the rule that no marriage equals no kids. Throughout nearly 40 years of Jefferson keeping Sally as his concubine, she would birth six of his children, four living until adulthood. When Thomas Jefferson died in 1826, Sally was unofficially freed by Jefferson's daughter. She would live in Charlottesville with her two sons until she passed away in 1835. Out of her four adult children, three of them would live their lives passing as white people, and some would even keep the secret until their death. Many didn't believe or simply want to accept that Thomas Jefferson had a child with Sally Hemings. It wasn't until 1998 when DNA test results confirmed that our third president did indeed have children with one of his slaves. The nearly multiple century rumor had been confirmed, but this wouldn't be the only time rumors of sexual nature would circulate about the president of the United States. I'm afraid, with Jefferson, we were just getting started. There is one thing I can tell you for certain about President Warren G. Harding. He made the women go crazy. I'm not so sure if it was his stone-cold face that attracted them to him, but boy was he a ladies' man. He was said to have had seven mistresses during his marriage to First Lady Florence Harding. Today we focus on two of them. In 1905, while Harding was lieutenant governor of Ohio, he began an affair with one of his good friend's wives, Carrie Phillips. The affair was intensely passionate, which only made it more thrilling. One could make the assumption that they liked nearly being caught by their spouses, because the two set of couples would often go on long rides together and even went on a cruise, where Warren and Carrie would often rendezvous right under their spouse's nose. When they weren't together, they would write steamy love letters, which Warren, who was already a successful politician, said to burn after reading. Although he did, she did not. The letters wouldn't be available to the public until 2014, but when Americans read them, Warren G. Harding would be looked at in a different light. He would often write her about his penis, which he nicknamed Jerry. In one of his letters, he said he was pleasuring himself by the fire and began to moan out Carrie's name. He soon heard a woman's voice, but it was just Florence upstairs asking him what he wanted. Yikes. Warren and Carrie would have their love affair for 15 years, but during that time, Harding would have other partners as well. One in particular was the young Nan Britton. Britton had developed a crush on Harding when she was just 13 years old, which soon became an obsession. She would clip out his picture from the newspaper and hang them in her room. Her friends found her obsession with Harding, over 30 years her senior, strange. And her father found it concerning and even asked Harding to speak with his daughter. He did, and Warren even encouraged her to find a boy more near her own age. But I'm afraid the encounter may have infatuated Nan to Warren even more, because once she graduated high school, she wrote Harding asking him two things. One, if he remembers her, and two, asking if the now senator could help land her a job as a secretary. Harding wrote back saying yes to both things. The pair would get together in New York City in 1917 and begin an affair that would last until his death in 1923. In 1919, on the couch in his Senate office, Nan and Warren conceived a child. Warren was shocked because he thought he was unable to have children from a wicked case of the mumps whenever he was younger. As far as Nan, well, she was thrilled to be carrying his baby. They had a girl named Elizabeth Ann in October of 1919. But at this point, Harding had his eye on the presidency and knew that if people found out about his illegitimate daughter, it could be the end of his political career. He would financially provide for both Nan and Elizabeth, but he would never meet the child. At this point, Harding was president and also having to pay Carrie Phillips hush money for their affair. He was starting to skate on thin ice. Some people secretly knew of the philandering president, such as Alice Roosevelt Longworth, daughter of former President Teddy Roosevelt, who once said of Harding, "My God, we've got a president who doesn't know beds were invented." But one will never know if Warren would have gotten caught in the web he was weaving, because he would die in office in 1923. He died of a heart attack at the age of 57, and soon after his death, many stories of scandal began to come out about his administration. And you betcha, Nan Britton let the world in on her little secret. She had a baby with the 29th president. Nan tried going to Harding's sister with the news, but she didn't believe her because Nan had been faithful to Warren and burned the letters they wrote, so she had absolutely no proof. At this point, she decided to write a book called The President's Daughter to tell the details of the affair. But it was so scandalous that no publisher would dare publish it, so she would self-publish and make a fortune. Still, the Harding family denied the illegitimate child. It wouldn't be until the year of 2015 when, once again, DNA finally confirmed the relation. Between the raunchy love letters and his secret love child, President Warren G. Harding is being judged in a new way, but perhaps it's best if he stays under the covers, right where he best prefers. John F. Kennedy was, by far, in my opinion, the president who did the most philandering. It was constant and never-ending. This would appear to be a common theme among Kennedy men, but the tall, dark, and handsome John especially had a way with women. His charm and charisma would get him very far in life, and the ladies loved him for it. It was said that on his honeymoon with Jackie, he snuck off to have sex with another woman. He would be setting the scene for an entire marriage of cheating on his wife. And after studying the Kennedys, I've come to the conclusion that it just didn't matter who Jack was with. He would never be faithful. It had absolutely nothing to do with Jackie. 13 of his mistresses have come to light so far, but if you ask me, that's only the tip of the iceberg. Many of the other women, I'm sure, are dead and gone, and we will never know of the affairs they had with our 35th president. It wouldn't shock me if proof came out that JFK had at least one woman outside of his marriage every day. With all this being said, how did all this cheating not leak to the American people? Well, there was still the secret understanding by the press not to cover presidential affairs. But let's think about this. If the American people did in fact find out, given the time period, would they have simply looked past it? Perhaps many men would even be envious and desire his lifestyle, and some wives just feel right at home. That's just some food for thought. It was said that Kennedy liked blondes, and it's ironic given Jackie's dark hair, but nevertheless. His most infamous affair is with actress and model Marilyn Monroe. Yet the details of the relationship are foggy. While we know she basically made love to him by song when she sang happy birthday to him at his 45th birthday party, we aren't entirely sure of the extent of their relationship. They are said to have spent a weekend at Bing Crosby's house, but much else is purely speculation. I think that's what keeps drawing people in after all these years, the unknown between them. Another affair he had was with two White House interns nicknamed Fiddle and Faddle. It was said that they would often swim nude with the president and return to their desks with wet hair. At times, Kennedy would meet women outside of the White House without the Secret Service. When this was the case, he wouldn't be near the briefcase holding our nuclear codes in case of an emergency. It would seem as if he valued sex above anything. The paradox of John F. Kennedy is difficult to understand. The Mr. Perfect image that was once there of our slayed president has transitioned into more of an educated understanding that the greatest leaders can have extreme flaws. It's hard to understand, yet necessary to do in order to try and recognize who someone really is, at times a troubled genius. And we are moving on from one ladies' man to another. John F. Kennedy wrote the playbook for Bill Clinton. Only it seems Clinton didn't read the chapter on not getting caught, or maybe he simply lived in a different time. I cover his cheating ways in the very first episode of the show if you want further details on it. But it would seem from the start that Bill Clinton was a playboy. During his presidential campaign, a nightclub singer named Jennifer Flowers claimed that she and Clinton had a 12-year affair, which he would later admit to. The skeletons in his closet just kept coming when in 1994, Paula Jones accused Clinton, then governor of Arkansas, of asking her for a blowjob and exposing himself to her. She would sue him, and he settled for $850,000. But the press and American public alike ridiculed Jones endlessly. Clinton would never learn from his mistakes, it seemed, instead would just keep making them. In 1995, he would begin a relationship with 22-year-old Monica Lewinsky. The relationship began during a government shutdown, and the affair lasted a year and a half before Ken Starr would catch them red-handed. Clinton would lie under oath about their relationship, and this act would go on to get him impeached because he committed perjury, but he was not removed from office and still served his full term. His reputation was rocky after the Lewinsky scandal and is still quite controversial to this day. His wife Hillary, along with all the other wives of the men we cover today, never left their husbands. They knew all, yet they all stayed. Did these women think their husbands would eventually change, or did they accept the cheating as a trade-off for a glamorous and powerful life? Maybe it was a bit of both, but as we have seen, they never change. One thing all these men have in common is that they abused the power they were given. The power imbalance is immoral and makes it hard and uncomfortable for people to say no. In many cases, the perpetrator knows this, but simply doesn't care, which I believe is what we saw with all four men. It's hard to understand how people can be so good and so bad all at the same time. They say you don't want to meet your heroes because you'll be disappointed, and I'm afraid they're right, whoever they are. And like I said, this is just part one of many, so keep your eye out for more episodes to come over presidential affairs. If you aren't following my social media pages, you're missing out on more content and updates on the show. Don't forget to subscribe to my YouTube channel for new videos, and don't forget to check out my website at www.thechroniclesoftimepodcast.com. If you have any episode suggestions or just want to talk history, email me at thechroniclesoftimepodcast@gmail.com. Leave the show a rating and review and tell your friends about your favorite history podcast. Thank you for listening to this episode over presidential affairs. I'm your host, Rachel Payton, and this is the Chronicles of Time.